Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's also you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Caitlin.
Do you remember when we did Pagentuary on the Patreon, aka Matreon?
Yes.
As one of our themes.
One of our worst theme names of all time, I would say. I don't think I ever said it correctly. It's a mouthful.
Well, we made it, the word up, so.
I say it like I say Ewan McGregor. So like Pagentuary.
Sure. I think It was a good theme, but poorly named. And it just got me thinking that we've done several pageant movies on the show, including today's episode, which we'll get to in a moment.
It's true.
But
well,
a lot of pageant narratives.
I thought that was all leading up to like some really elaborate pun.
No.
I've also noticed we've covered a lot of pageant movies. We've done Drop Dead Gorgeous. We've done Miss Congeniality. We've done, what was the other one we did during Pageantuary?
Dumplin'. And Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of pageant movies, a lot of which I love, including, transition.
Wow.
The movie we're talking about today. We're talking about Miss Juneteenth today on the Bechdel cast. But first, who are we and what is the Bechdel cast? Well, wow. Caitlin, why don't you tell us?
Well, first of all, I'm Caitlin Durante, and
I'm Jamie Loftus.
This is our show where we examine movies through an intersectional feminist lens using the Bechdel test simply as a jumping off point. And that, of course, is a media metric, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test. It first appeared in Alison Bechdel's comic Dykes to Watch Out For as a bit. It was a joke. It was a goof. And it now exists as a commonly cited media metric. There are many versions of it. Ours is this. Two characters of a marginalized gender have to have names. They have to speak to each other, and that conversation has to be about something other than a man. And we especially like it when it's a nice and meaty conversation.
A good beefy convo.
A big beefy burger of a conversation.
No waiters with a name tag saying, "Would you like fries with that?" Yes. Doesn't count. Mm-mm. We've grown past it. Also, the show's about a lot more than that, as we're about to get into. I still love, all these years later, when people are lying to our faces about listening to the show, which is fine. You don't have to listen to a show, but they're like, "Oh yeah, that's the show where you go through every line of dialogue in a movie and try to figure out if it passes." I was like,
no.
Who would listen to that? Mm-hmm. Look, we named the show 7 years ago and we have to live with it. and here we are. Life goes on. And today we have an incredible episode. I feel like this really, this brings our pageant movies we've covered over the years. I don't know if there's others. Are we missing any at this point? Have we done every pageant movie?
I think there are others that are maybe a bit more like off the beaten path. But as far as like quite mainstream ones, because there's one called, I think it's called Beautiful, that oh my gosh, what is her name? She is in Good Will Hunting. She's British.
Minnie Driver?
Yes, Minnie Driver.
All right, we have to start the show. We can't get into Minnie Driver discourse at this time.
No. But there's that movie about a pageant, and then there's got to be others. Anyway.
Let's get our guest in here.
Yes, yes. She is a TV and film critic for New York Magazine's site Vulture. She lives in Chicago with her boyfriend and four cats, which means 30.
Oh.
Two nipples, because cats have
fast math.
Eight nipples. Well, I'm a genius. And
I loved your reaction to 32 nipples.
One of the best compliments she's ever received is from a close friend who called her deliciously vulgar.
Incredible.
Ooh, it's Angelica Jade Bastian. Hello.
Hey. Welcome. I'm so happy to be here.
We're so excited to have you.
Talk a great movie. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. We cite your work quite frequently on the show.
All the time,
so it's an honor to actually have you here in the flesh.
Oh, an honor. That's kind of lofty. I will try to live up to how I come across on the page.
Well, you are deliciously,
deliciously vulgar.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I do curse a lot more in person than I do on the page for obvious reasons. But I'm just like more vulgar in general in person. So when my good friend, who is a contributing writer at The New Yorker and a teacher in the English department at Northwestern, Laura Michelle Jackson, told me that on a friend trip in Sagatuck, Michigan.
Incredible.
Over a board game, I was so touched. I was like, that is such an amazing compliment. And I was like, oh, I got to use this in my bio. I need motherfuckers to know I'm deliciously vulgar.
I can't wait to hear more.
And they are indeed motherfuckers. It's part of the deliciously vulgar experience.
Exactly. You get it.
So we're so stoked to have you here.
Truly. Tell us your relationship with Miss Juneteenth.
Well, I ended up, you know, seeing the trailer and hearing about it. And I asked to review it at work when it came out in 2020. Mm-hmm. And I ended up really loving the movie, loving its cultural specificity, and really having a great time talking to Nicole Beharie for an interview about the film for Vulture as well. But I hadn't seen it since I reviewed it, which isn't out of the norm. A lot of times I'll review something and then just kind of move on because there's so much I want to watch, so much I want to see and experience. So it was really nice revisiting the film for this podcast, you know, a few years later. And I was like, yeah, this is still a really great, touching, moving film. That's a simple story well told, is how I'd put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're, of course, referring to the piece you wrote for Vulture entitled Miss Juneteenth is a Gently Beautiful Film Worth Celebrating, which is a really wonderful piece. We recommend our listeners check it out.
Nice.
As a companion piece to this episode.
Ooh,
wow.
Companion piece.
A deliciously vulgar. Actually, I wouldn't say that one is vulgar. It's a pretty gentle, lovely piece.
It's very gently lovely piece. But if you want something on the more vulgar side,
please.
I did write about Dead Ringers through the lens of Rachel Weisz's performance.
Ooh.
And I used the word cunt twice in my lead.
Wow. Truly, I haven't read that yet. That's exciting.
I hope you have a fun time with it. I had a really fun time writing it.
Nice.
I revisit your Cruella essay often. I'm trying to think of like my, anyways, big fan.
No, that's funny you mentioned Cruella. My boyfriend and I were talking about it the other day. And I was like, man, the headline for that was like really good. It was Cruella is the girl bossification of the mad woman.
Yeah.
Because that whole movie is just a joke to me. It's also like, why are we doing a backstory on a villain who wanted to kill puppies? How are you? What are we doing?
Puppies killed her parents. It was,
is that the backstory?
Yes.
Is that true?
Oh, yes.
Two dogs push her mom over, like, at least that's what she thinks and what you as the audience think till a reveal later on.
Yeah.
That
she's an unreliable
engineered.
Wow.
Oh, God. Yeah. That shows she's complicated, ladies.
Like, it's absolutely. I was like, I didn't need more than Glenn Close, Cruella, that we should have just stopped the train.
Let's stop. How about that? Let's stop doing the same thing story again and again. Let's have more films like Miss Juneteenth that are original and at a quiet tenor. That's always really nice. Like, more quiet, sweet, welcoming movies that are like a warm bath, you know? Mm-hmm. That's what I want.
Absolutely. Jamie, what's your history relationship with Miss Juneteenth?
I had seen the movie once before. I remember hearing about it when it came out, possibly from your work, Angelica, and being like, I'm going to see that in theaters. But it was 2020, so I did not indeed see it in theaters.
Nope.
I do think that this movie had a long tenure on Netflix, I want to say. I watched it on streaming in 2020 when it was released, and thought it was really lovely. Again, it felt, we were talking about this a little bit off mic, but just, I remember the first time I watched it, because of sort of what we're conditioned to think about pageant movies, that it's going to be the coming of age story for the person competing in the pageant and not their parent. And I remember being like pleasantly taken off guard by Turquoise being the protagonist of this movie. And I really enjoyed it. And I didn't really have my analysis goggles on. I just liked it. And it was really fun to go back and to experience it again. It's such a good, like, I don't know, this movie just feels so effortless in everything it's doing. And I feel like that's really, really, really hard to do in a coming of age movie. I feel like even in ones I like, you get these like really overwritten speeches about like, and now I have come of age, and, which can also be great. But it's just like this movie, yeah, it just feels so lovely and effortless. And I'm excited to talk about it. Caitlin, what was your history with this movie?
I didn't see it until beginning to prep for this episode. So my history with it is very short, but I really like the movie. I tend not to seek out more like character-driven stories because I like big bombastic romps. You know me.
No explosions. No Dalmatians killing parents. What's the point?
Exactly. So character study type movies are, they can be a little hit or miss for me, but this one's really tender and moving, and I really liked it. And all of the performances are really wonderful. And yeah, it's just a very lovely movie.
I feel like because, I mean, so much of the of 2020 is like a confusing blur to me. I was surprised in rewatching Nicole Beharie's performance that she wasn't nominated for more. Like, I saw she got like a lot, like she got nominated for an Independent Spirit Award. She got nominated for, I think, or she won a Gotham Award. But I was like, I feel like it shouldn't have stopped there. It's such a beautiful performance. Like, I just really... and then reading about her process and like researching and going down to Texas and just like meeting people, I just was really, I really fell in love with her in reading about like her process and actually like rewatching her performance a couple times.
Yeah, it's a shame she wasn't nominated for more. But I think the reason why she wasn't is because it's a great performance whose greatness isn't legible to what award bodies expect from a great performance.
For sure.
Right.
You know, like I think a lot of times the performances that are praised when it comes to award bodies, especially when you're getting to like the Oscars and stuff like that, is often work that makes the quote unquote labor of acting very visible for audiences. So they can see the effort, they can see the choices made. And a lot of times I'm not really a big fan of those kind of performances. Like I think like Cate Blanchett in Tar is a interesting example of that, where it's a culmination of a lot of work she's done. And it's an effortful performance in a lot of ways, which can be really fascinating. I am partially fascinated by that movie and performance, partially frustrated by it. But I think she's an interesting example for what it takes for female actors to gain credibility in award bodies. Also, like, they expect a certain kind of performance from Black women to gain traction with awards.
Right. It's a lot of, like, pain and tears and like yelling speeches while tears are flowing down the face kind of thing, I think is what tends to garner attention for like Oscar nominations, especially when it comes to performances from Black women.
Yeah. Has the Oscars ever nominated a Black female performer for a performance that is not rooted in pain?
Ooh,
not that I can remember.
I don't think so. No. I mean, because even if you're thinking about Angela Bassett's nomination this last year, like that performance, I mean, it was an incredible performance, but so rooted in grief and pain. And
yeah. I mean, I've legit never thought about it like that. But now I'm like, that's a little interesting. Suspect.
Let's keep our eye on that. It's
almost like something is not quite right with that Academy.
I wonder what the problem is.
But I think that, I mean, part of what makes Nicole Beharie's performance so amazing, you say in your piece, Angelica, of like, it's a performance that is just so rooted in like existence. And like, she's so at home in this character, and it's so effortless versus, the effortful. Like, I feel like when I think of Academy Award effort, I think of like DiCaprio in The Bear, and you're like, oh my God.
The Revenant. Enough.
How bad do you want that damn trophy?
Like, oh, he is like, I will take it all off. I will literally have sex with someone for this trophy. Let me do anything, everything. You can have all of me for an Oscar, which is fine. Yeah. You know, if that's what you want to do.
To each their own.
But I always find it really interesting, the neediness of certain actors with the Oscars. Like, it's kind of fascinating watching, like, sometimes it's expected. You expect Leonardo DiCaprio to, like, go like extreme, like put his body through stuff, put his mind through stuff, like be an effortful performer, like I said. But then sometimes you're like looking at like the campaign trail and I was kind of surprised by how much Colin Farrell was campaigning. Yeah. Like, I don't think he was being like so needy that it's on a DiCaprio level. But he's an actor whose career is interesting because there was a moment, a long moment, where he was really trying to be a mainstream, almost action-y, but not quite action-y. Like, you know, that, didn't they have that Total Recall remake? Am I, like, making that up?
Yeah.
Right?
Would you include his Phone Booth movie to be in that, like, action
sort
feral?
Of, yeah. It's, yeah, I was actually thinking of that.
Loved that movie.
But to see him after, like, all this time where it's like, oh, he's, like, focusing on character work. He's just in it for the work and the love of the work. To see him, like, really out there campaigning, I was like, man, everybody is thirsty.
People need validation.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, I can relate with that.
When you say it like that, it is like them getting recognized by a body of their peers. And like, when you think of it like that, of course they want to be like, they're fucking actors. Like, that is that like part of the thing?
But you do think, I feel like Colin Farrell is like curated, I think pretty effective, like the cool guy persona so much that you're like, oh, he doesn't care about trophies.
Right.
And you're like, wow, he does.
He does care.
He does really care. And it's like, I mean, okay, he had a really good year last year. Good for Colin Farrell.
He did.
Yeah.
Good for him. It's
true. Anyway.
Sorry.
Let's talk about his true
talent. No, I was like, this is going to be a great episode. I guess it does make some unfair sense that Nicole Beharie wasn't more recognized by larger bodies of work, but it's just like, I don't know, now that I've seen this movie twice in the last week, I just am like so blown away by her. I want to see her in more stuff.
I
read that she was blacklisted for a while after requesting accommodations for an autoimmune disease that she developed during the production of Sleepy Hollow, which is a show I did watch a substantial amount of. But
really?
After learning about that, and I was like, oh my God.
I just
like,
learned two things.
Yeah, like horrifying that she developed an illness during production, needed accommodations for that illness, and then Mr. Hollywood was like, no.
Sorry, we're ableist. Like, that's, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah,
because she came out talking about that like after the show was done. And if you watch the show, I thought the first season was really fun. And I'm like, oh, they're going to build on a relationship, this interracial, cross-time, weird relationship between these two characters. Mm-hmm. And then they don't. And then her character is like they really stopped giving a fuck about her character in that show. Mm-hmm. And I was just, that was at a like moment in Hollywood history, like right before our conversations about diversity started to like be reawakened. And mm-hmm. we're seeing like the studios put more effort into that. Although I think it's craven. It's never altruistic with these studios. These are companies,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like really interesting to kind of like look at how her career was affected by that, because I still don't think it's like bounced back despite, you know, a great performance in Miss Juneteenth. Mm. And it's a shame because I think in a lot of ways, audiences, critics, people in the industry, think the industry has really gone dramatically forward in terms of diversity. Like it's been a noticeable difference. And I'm like, look at the, like, you know, I'm going to speak from a Black perspective, but like, look, for example, at the Black actors who were kind of slipping through the cracks despite being super talented, despite sometimes having like one high profile thing, you would think, oh, like the industry's doing better. Of course, this great performer is going to have like other opportunities. And that's like not happening. Mm-hmm. I especially see that with like elder Black actors. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why aren't we seeing, like, I kind of thought about it with Keith David and Nope. And I was like, I'm glad he showed up in it. But like his character is important for dying, not for doing anything. Right. And I'm like, I would like to see these older actors get actual work that really lives up to their talents and offers them the kind of work that they've wanted for so long. And they've demonstrated they're talented, but they haven't gotten the consistent work.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really frustrating. We're still seeing there's only a few like directors and actors of color, of marginalized genders, of different presentations and like sexualities and all that stuff. Like they're not getting the consistent work. It's a very small group of people who are getting the consistent work. Mm-hmm. And because like Hollywood history is so jagged with progress for people of color, you know, it seems like there's more happening than there actually is. And it's easy to forget like an actress like Nicole Beharie, despite being incredibly talented. Mm-hmm. And obviously she has an autoimmune disorder. So that can affect, you know, what kind of work she's willing to take on and like what she wants to do. But she's still like, she can still do like fun character work like this. And we're just not seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I speaking to that point, it does feel like, especially with award systems and just larger institutions, and I think areas of the media as well, like there's a tendency to celebrate a moment but not sustain it, or like celebrate a performance and be like, this person is back, and then they're gone again because there is not the consistent. And I feel like that goes to obviously who's behind the camera as well. I'm wondering if either of you know, I wasn't able to find anything of the writer director of this movie, Channing Godfrey Peoples. They've released a short film the year after this, but I don't know that there's been, I haven't heard anything from this amazing director. And you're like, it's been 3 years. Why aren't we giving her stuff? Like, it's,
It's a damn shame.
It is a damn shame.
But let's talk about the movie.
Yes, let's. Let us take a quick break and then we will come back for the recap.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Okay, so here is the synopsis for Miss Juneteenth. The story takes place in Fort Worth, Texas. We meet Turquoise Jones, played by Nicole Beharie. She is a former winner of her community's Miss Juneteenth pageant. We meet her while she's like taking a trip down memory lane. She's looking at her dress and her tiara. But that was 15 years ago. Turquoise is now a single mother. She works at a bar. We meet her colleagues at the bar, Betty Ray and the owner, this guy named Wayman. She stops by an auto body shop to get her truck fixed by Ronnie, played by Kendrick Sampson.
I love Kendrick Sampson.
He's very good.
Yeah, in everything. He's got such range, and he's so good in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, all right, that's all I have to say this time.
So Turquoise is in this like on-again, off-again relationship with Ronnie, who is also the father of her teenage daughter, Kai. Turquoise takes Kai, played by Alexis Chiquis. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce her last name. Takes her to register for this year's Miss Juneteenth pageant. We also learn about Juneteenth, which is, of course, the holiday that celebrates the date that slaves in Texas learned they were free on June 19th, 1865, which was 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. The winner of Miss Juneteenth receives a scholarship to any historically black college of her choosing. And for this reason, Turquoise is like really pushing for Kai to participate in the pageant. And she really wants this victory for her to have access to this scholarship. But you can tell that Kai is not really interested in competing in the pageant. She's just doing it to appease her mom, and Kai would rather join the dance team.
That's something that really stuck out to me about this movie right away, where I feel like the other pageant movies we've covered, like they make it a joke. I know in Miss Congeniality, it's a consistent joke throughout the movie that like it's a scholarship program, when it's like, no, actually, we are here to be competitive and to be pretty and blah, 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 blah. And I like that this movie is like, no, it is for the scholarship. That's why, like, I mean, it's for a lot of reasons, but that is a big component of it. I feel like that's usually kind of pushed by the wayside or made to seem disingenuous in a way that kind of, yeah, that I think is sort of meant to illustrate people who participate in pageants as frivolous and unimportant. So I liked that this movie hit that really clearly.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And then so Kai participating in the pageant means that she needs to keep her grades up and represent herself well in the community. And it also means a lot of costs. There's like buying the gown, there's registration fees, there's all these expenses. But Turquoise doesn't make a lot of money at the bar, nor at her second job at a funeral home. We also meet the owner of the funeral home. He's this guy named Bacon, played by Akron Watson, who is openly in love with Turquoise. Talks about it all the time.
Has been for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. But she is not interested in him at this time. Kai gets accepted into the pageant, which Turquoise is more excited about than Kai is. Turquoise wants her to perform Maya Angelou's poem Phenomenal Woman as her talent, because that's what Turquoise did when she was competing in the pageant. However, Kai wants to dance for her talent, but Turquoise isn't having it. Meanwhile, the pageant expenses are starting to pile up. Also, Turquoise's electricity bill is overdue, so she picks up extra shifts at work and tries to get her mother, Charlotte, played by Lori Hayes, to watch Kai. But Charlotte refuses. She is super religious and wants to, like, save Turquoise and Kai. Mm. Meanwhile, Ronnie gets arrested for, I think, shooting an alligator that attacked him while he was fishing.
Yep.
Yes. I was like, is that what happened?
And that was at that point in the movie, I'm like, I don't know a lot about Texas.
I know. I was like, gators I associate with Florida, but yeah, it just goes to show how little I know about U.S. geography.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he gets arrested and now Turquoise has to bail him out, which is another expense. Turquoise and Kai celebrate Kai's 15th birthday together, though they have to do so in the dark because the power has been shut off. Then we see Kai continuing to prep for the pageant. Turquoise continues to work a bunch at the bar, although one of her shifts gets cut short when she discovers her mother, Charlotte, is blackout drunk at the bar, and Turquoise has to take her home and care for her. Meanwhile, Kai is hanging out with her boyfriend. I don't know if we even ever learn his name.
I don't think we do.
But some boy from school, and then Turquoise comes home and catches her and reprimands her for sneaking around and having boys over. And Kai is like, I'm not a kid anymore. Classic mother-daughter.
Classic thing a teenager will say.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, no, in my mind, you're going to be a kid for a while. It's okay. It's okay to be a kid. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's so fun to watch. Like, I just think of like movies I watched when I was a teenager being like, yeah, she's right. And then like watching it when I'm 30 and being like, no, she's
no. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She should be home by 11.
Yeah. At the latest. I can't. Oh, yeah. Lord. Pray for my kids and whatever strictness I will be moving with. Oopsies.
I know. I feel I'm like full team mom.
Oh, yeah.
As long as like, because Turk is an amazing mom. So I'm full. Like, I'm like, yeah, Kai, you do have to come home by 11. Sorry.
Yeah. Like, you're 15. Like, come on now. Yeah.
Come on.
What are you even doing? You can't even drink. You can't even, like, what are you doing out there?
I don't know.
Just hanging out, dancing.
Learning dance moves, yeah.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend does seem very sweet.
He's supportive. He's writing mixes for her dance choreography.
It's all very teenager, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Babe, I made you this tape. Anyway, so Turquoise keeps working very hard to pay for all of these expenses. She has a conversation with her boss, Wayman, about taking pride in being able to run your own thing that no one can take away from you, even if it is something like a hole-in-the-wall dive bar. Meanwhile, Bacon, the funeral home guy, tells Turquoise that he can provide for her and her daughter, and he's like really trying to convince her to be with him, and she's like, pass. Then there's a scene where Turquoise's mom tries to save her and Kai.
Ugh.
It's very uncomfortable.
Like throwing holy water. They're like, the part of the congregation is like in a circle around Turquoise and Kai and like praying
them.
Over. It's so uncomfortable. And it's like, oh, wow, this mother sucks.
Yeah.
Especially, I thought it was so brilliant the way that we learn about Turquoise's mom over the course of the movie, mm-hmm. where we're like, it almost seems like she's presented kind of as like a stock character of like very religious parent, but then you learn that she's struggling with addiction and that it's clearly affected the direction of Turquoise's life. And then mm-hmm. we go back to the religious stuff and then you're like, no, like Charlotte, oh,
it's really interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that like, that scene is so claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And all this to say that things are kind of falling apart for Turquoise, and Kai can see how difficult her mother has it. Also, the dress rehearsal for the pageant is coming up, and Ronnie owes Turquoise money, which she needs to pay for the dress, but he kind of disappears. So Kai has to do the dress rehearsal in her regular clothes, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, humiliating for them. Then Wayman, the owner of the bar, has a heart attack and is hospitalized. Bacon asks Turquoise to go to a fundraiser party to help with his medical bills. And they go and they have a nice time. But Ronnie finds out that she went with Bacon and he gets jealous and aggressive. And then he storms off. And Bacon is like, all right, do you want to be with me or not? And Turquoise is like, I thought I already made this clear. But no, I just want something for myself.
Another great moment, because I feel like a movie that came out 20 years ago, that scene probably would have gone differently.
Yeah. She probably would have been like, yeah, let's smooch.
Yeah.
Bacon.
You've worn me down after all these years.
Right.
Isn't it romantic?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, she's like, I don't really know what I want right now, but it's not you. And I need to figure out what I want for myself.
Yeah.
Then it's the day of the Miss Juneteenth pageant. Kai wears her mother's dress with some alterations because they couldn't end up affording the $800 dress that Turquoise was trying to buy. Kai does perform the poem, but she does it to dance choreography that she's been practicing, to music that her boyfriend mixed for her. And Turquoise isn't sure about this at first, but the performance goes well, and then she's really proud of her daughter. Mm-hmm. The runners-up and the winner are announced, and Kai, in another like interesting movie subversion, Kai does not win anything. Mm-hmm. And she's upset because she thinks she disappointed her mother. Turquoise is upset on Kai's behalf for not getting the opportunities that come with winning, like the scholarship. Mm-hmm. Then Turquoise apologizes to Kai, saying, oh, you know, I've been trying to make you Miss Juneteenth, but you're Miss Kai Marie Jones. And I'm like,
and then we're crying.
We're crying.
Great.
And then the story wraps up with Turquoise putting a small down payment to buy Wayman's bar because he can't afford to keep running it with his medical bills. And this gives her a chance to have something of her own, something that she can run. So it's a win-win for both of them. And then the movie ends with Turquoise and Kai having a nice moment. And then Turquoise is like, hey, when are those dance team tryouts? And we're like, yay, she's learning. The end. So let's take another quick break and we'll come back to discuss.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now. Meaningful Beauty, beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
And we're back.
Where do we want to start? Angelica, is there anything that jumps out to you right away?
Yeah. One thing I wanted to call out, and I mentioned a little earlier, was just the cultural specificity of Miss Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. I think it's very easy for mainstream media, film and television in particular, to kind of act like Black people are a monolith and there aren't like some dramatic cultural differences, even amongst people in the South. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot about Juneteenth because that is specifically a Black Texan thing. Mm-hmm. That is not, that wasn't like a popular talking point amongst like all Black people. It was very specific to Black Texans, not just Black Southerners, but Black Texans. Mm-hmm. And I just love the work the film puts in to really show the specificity, the importance, the care that these Black folks put into Juneteenth celebrations and what it means to them. And while I am very happy to have Juneteenth off because white people figured out it was a thing, I do think it's really interesting how it's become like sort of flattened into, oh yeah, this is like for all Black people. And I'm like, we can't forget like the specific cultural forces at play that led to Juneteenth existing as a celebration and Juneteenth becoming a holiday. I don't know. I have a lot of feelings about how the South is portrayed and discussed in film and television. As a Southern gal, I'm from, born and primarily raised in Miami, but my family and my maternal family is from rural Louisiana. And also I have a lot of family in Texas as well, but Louisiana is kind of like my second home, specifically this very small town that if I were to say the name and you knew it, it would be weird to me because it's like very, very, very small. But I think what's interesting right now and like rewatching Miss Juneteenth, I was thinking about a lot of the conversations happening about another southern state, Florida, and everything going on with this anti-gay, anti-trans bills. And I was thinking about the ways that people kind of discount how many Black people are in the South. And it's just like, oh yeah, we should just saw off that part of the country and like move on from it. And I'm just like, so we're just gonna leave Black queer people to just kind of languish? And it really breaks my heart because there's a lot of cultural beauty to these places and a lot of Black joy in these places that is being discounted because of terrible, racist, homophobic monsters. And I just, I don't know, I just want people to, you know, watch movies like Miss Juneteenth and see the beauty and cultural grooves of the South and understand that the South is worth fighting for in my mind. But I have family in the South, so I'm looking at it differently than I think some people do. But yeah, Miss Juneteenth kind of brought up a lot of ideas about just the South, where it's at right now, who lives there, who deserves our care, and sort of the people who slip through the cracks, because a woman like Turquoise is not really the lead you get in a lot of films. Like, she's working class, she's struggling, she's a single mom, and the film really recognizes her humanity, and I think it's our responsibility to recognize the humanity of people struggling in the South in general.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
And like you point out in your piece, and I think we've kind of touched on this already, but the story is quite small scale. You know, it's about this like pretty specific microcosm of this pageant, and it's happening over the course of, it seems like only maybe a couple months at most, but it's like, it's such a beautiful story that taps into so much of what Turquoise's life is like and what she's dealing with. And, you know, she's a single mom, she's poor, she's dealing with the attention of a few different men. None of them seem like great romantic options for her. She had to kind of relinquish the opportunity that she did get by winning Miss Juneteenth, you know, a decade and a half prior. I don't think it's ever said outright in the movie, and maybe this is just my headcanon, but it seemed like she wasn't able to quote unquote cash in on like the scholarship or the, you know, the opportunities that she received by winning because she got pregnant with Kai. And so she wasn't able to either go to or finish her schooling. You know, she had to raise her daughter.
And it felt like she implied, and again, maybe I'm misreading, but she implied that her relationship with her mom also made it all the more difficult to kind of cash in on that and like caring a lot for her mom while she was struggling with addiction.
Definitely. Right. So there's, you know, all these variables that kind of prevented her from reaching a certain potential. And now she's so focused on making sure the same thing doesn't happen for her daughter. But it manifests as this like really wonderful, relatable story where like she knows what she wants for her daughter, but she has to learn to accept what her daughter actually wants for herself. And she has to figure out what she wants for herself. So she's like kind of projecting all this stuff onto Kai, kind of ignoring what Kai clearly wants for Kai, and also sort of ignoring what Turquoise wants or like what she should maybe pursue. And it's just like this story of self-discovery and like letting go to some extent, but also like doing your best.
Yeah, definitely. I think one thing I was thinking about is the way this country works, the way this world works, if you're struggling in poverty, you do not have the time, the chance, and the opportunity to really dream, let alone realize those dreams, which is what makes the ending of Miss Juneteenth so beautiful. And while Turquoise is definitely struggling, I think there are these really beautiful moments of communion amongst Black people, these really moving moments of joy and just connection. And I would describe Miss Juneteenth as like a lo-fi gem. I love bombastic, gargantuan, monstrous, you know, money dumped into them kind of movies. I love, you know, the small movies as well. I just love movies. But, you know, watching a lo-fi gem like this is, it's really refreshing because it's like you're kind of stepping into the lives of other people for a brief period of time. And what makes, I think, Miss Juneteenth so strong is you get this feeling of history. You can feel the history that preceded the movie, and you have a vision of how their lives will continue afterwards and how different it will be. And I really like that hopefulness and also that sense of time. And like, you really do feel like you're just kind of, oh, I'm just stepping into the lives of these people in this moment of their life. And they're just living their life. And it's just really nice to watch Black people just being, just like living, no matter like the circumstances of that life. But like, you know, I think it's important, and I hate using that word, but I do think it is important to witness people of color, queer folks, just kind of living and not having their lives be completely defined by their marginalization. It can infuse the story. Of course it will. But having so many of these so-called diverse stories that we're getting be so obsessed with the struggle is really frustrating.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I feel like that goes back to the Oscar discussion we were having earlier, where it's like the performances that pain is so central to are the ones that are uplifted, and it seems like the ones that get the institutional backing. I wanted to share a quote from Channing Godfrey Peoples that sort of speaks to that point. This is from when the movie was released in 2020. She says, "I believe the kind of work I want to do is tell stories about humanity, and especially the humanity of Black folks. When you talk about Charles Burnett's Killer of Sheep and My Brother's Wedding, Julie Dash's Daughters of the Dust, you get to see Black folks in these really natural environments with all their subtleties. These are the films where you see Black folks just be. I talked a little bit earlier about this authentic community I grew up in. It gave me this sense, and I could just sit in this community and just watch and take it in. I believe in authentic dialogue. I'm a stickler to staying close to the script because I'm showing a community on screen that hasn't been seen before. Growing up in this community, there's so much that you feel. I love subtlety and nuance and finding those tiny human moments. Those are so important to a character's journey, and those are the moments that feel the most real to me." And that like comes across in every single frame of this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, yeah, also connects to what you're talking about, Angelica, about the extreme specificity of this movie. And part of what makes it feel so effortless is because this is Channing Godfrey Peoples, like, lived experience and something that mm-hmm. she had a vested interest in wanting to share with the world as a filmmaker. And it just feels, I don't know, every element of this community feels, like you're saying, like real, like almost like a documentary, like you're just stepping into this world that doesn't explain itself to you. You just explore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing I want to really call out is Channing Godfrey Peoples' like amazing direction. This is mm-hmm. like, you know, witnessing someone's first feature and it's just like so realized like this, and you can get across like, oh, this is their voice. And there's such warmth to both the direction and the cinematography mm-hmm. and such detailing that's really beautiful. And it's the kind of direction that doesn't call attention to itself, but it is making very smart choices about framing and where bodies are in the space that they're inhabiting. Mm-hmm. I was really, really taken in by her direction when I first watched it and rewatching it.
Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful. And like, there's so many, I don't know, on the rewatch of this movie, just seeing all these, because she so fully understands and knows how she wants to present the Fort Worth community and this Black community in particular, you get all of these subtleties of like different kinds of communities within this community. Like you see the church community and how that affects Turquoise and Kai. You see the pageant community, which can be really exclusive and can be extremely judgmental. And, you know, Turquoise mm-hmm. is obviously feeling judged by a community that at one point was really important to her. And then I mm-hmm. think like the best of it is you see the community at the bar, which is like so loving and supportive. And I always get like emotional when Wayman has a heart attack and everyone's like, we have to fix this, and we have to fix it by like coming together and mm-hmm. having a party. And that's how we're going to support him through this. And it works. And like, I love that there's so many different worlds within the world. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you're not like told by the movie, like, this community is good, this community not good. Like you just are following Turquoise as she navigates it.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting to see how she upholds certain standards that the pageant has, which, you know, can be pretty rigid. They're pretty, what's the word for when, I don't know, it's almost like a bourgeois kind of, oh, you have to like pick up your little, it was a very
fork
Titanic thing. Start from the outside and work your way in kind of mm-hmm. where it's like, pick up your wine glass, pick up your dinner fork, all this stuff. And not that like Turquoise is like practicing anything like that at home, but she again understands how this opportunity is one of very few, if not the only opportunity she's going to be able to like provide for her daughter to get out of this kind of cycle of poverty. So she's kind of monitoring her daughter's behavior, who she hangs out with, what she wears, mm-hmm. how she speaks. She's like yeah. often correcting her grammar because she kind of has to like align with the expectations of the pageant and the propriety and the femininity and mm-hmm. the beauty. Because even though, again, that's like, we've talked about this a lot on various pageant episodes, it's like, yes, this is a contest to grant a scholarship, but if that is like the most important part of it, why are the girls like walking around in these expensive gowns and like mm-hmm. in full hair and makeup and stuff like that? If it really is about a scholastic thing, like why is appearance a factor at all, kind of thing? But like Turquoise kind of has no choice but to sort of uphold those standards. And it's interesting because it's like, some of these movies, like Dumplin', was sort of like about trying to dismantle the pageant industrial complex.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, that's not what this movie is about. And it's just like, yeah, Kai is just like trying to be a regular teenager pursuing her own interests. Her mother is like trying to open up this door for this scholarship opportunity. I don't know. It's just like a lot of interesting things that you're watching the characters navigate and balance. And like, you know, Kai is doing this to please her mom, even though she clearly doesn't want to. It's just, yeah. It's a lot of like interesting, again, very relatable things to watch unfold, especially from like in a mother-daughter relationship dynamic.
Yeah, and it's just so refreshing to watch mother-daughter stories in film because like everything is so obsessed with father-sons.
We talk about this all the time.
Or even just father and child. Slight rant, like I'm dragging my feet to watch Picard season 3, which I've heard is actually good and justifies the show existing finally. But spoiler alert for people, they decide to get like that Dr. Beverly Crusher and Jean-Luc Picard actually have a kid together, which he didn't know about, right? And of course it's a son. And I'm like, how many more father-sons do we need in Star Trek?
Especially because Picard and his mother, like there's a yes, you don't get a lot of mother-son stories either. Like,
no, you don't. You would think that mothers don't have sons or something, or they the mothers die. Yeah. It's just really frustrating. And I think Miss Juneteenth is like really good at teasing out the complications that come between a single mother and her like only daughter, whether there's other siblings or not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot, at least speaking personally, a lot of the growth and work that comes with that relationship, especially if there's like imbalances for whatever reason, is like the mother coming to terms with the fact that you can't make your daughter into the woman you wish you were. You have to nurture in the woman she's becoming.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Damn, that was a banger line. That is the truth.
Cut it, print it. There. It's true, and I feel like that is like something that any daughter of any mother can relate to some extent.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example of this. It's just done so well, and just again, like effortlessly in this movie, where you know that what Turquoise, like you understand why Turquoise is doing what she's doing, but you can also clearly see that it's misguided and it's not what her daughter wants or needs right now. And then you can also see the movie, you know, grants Turquoise the grace while like making it not like, you know, tiptoeing around, like clearly Kai doesn't want this. But you can also see how Turquoise's treatment from her own mother informs that. And like, I think that there's, I don't know, I mean, I can relate with this in my relationship with my own mom of like, my mom was, you know, deprived of a lot of love and had a mother who was struggling with addiction her entire life, and the relationship was strained. And, you know, it's like people respond to that experience differently, and how it comes out in Turquoise is like a little bit of just like, I know what's right. This is the opportunity. Just trust me. Let's get just get through this, and you can do what you want later, which is like a very, I think, common thing. And it's not it doesn't make you a bad parent, but it was interesting watching them navigate that kind of together. I don't know. It's just like so thoughtful. I love it.
Definitely. Some of the most like endearing and tender moments of the movie is Turquoise and Kai bonding, for example, the like the cake scene when and a lot of these moments are like kind of sprinkled with like the tension that exists between them, the way that tension is bound to exist between any like teenage kid and their parent. But it's like the cake scene starts out with Kai is like, I don't know, sitting in a dark closet on her phone, like probably texting her boyfriend, and clearly like, you know, feeling a certain way about the power being shut off. And she says something like, it's, you know, it's my birthday, can we go out? And Turquoise can't afford that, but she's already bought this cake, and she's like, you know, we're gonna celebrate here. And then they have this fun little like smearing cake on each other's faces, and it's again like both of them trying to like alleviate the tension of this like situation and these circumstances. And then there's another sweet scene where Kai is teaching her dad some of her choreography, and then her mom comes home and she's just like, ugh, what are you guys even doing? But then she joins in and like learns some of the dance moves too. And it's just like these sweet moments that show, yes, there is tension in this relationship, and yes, they don't always get along, and Kai probably feels a bit suffocated by all this pressure that Turquoise is projecting onto her, but they still find these like beautiful moments of levity, which was just like so wonderful to see.
Yeah. It's a very intimate film. It's a film that really prizes intimacy between its characters. Mm-hmm. And those tender moments you're highlighting, I think, are really good examples of that.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to, go over to, we've talked about it a little bit, but just kind of to come full circle on it. Turquoise's relationship with her mom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how that is sort of unspooled throughout the course of the movie. I just thought it was so well done. And again, just like this movie allows its characters to have shades of gray in this way that feels really unusual, where it's like Charlotte clearly was not the parent that Turquoise needed. Like she seemed to be kind of, struggling with addiction in a way that she still seems, at grandma age, not ready to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. And that's really, I think that the performance by Lori Hayes is so beautiful and painful, because it's, you can hold some anger for Charlotte for not being the parent that Turquoise needed, and also see that she's been suffering for so much of her life. Mm-hmm. And is doing, everyone's doing the best they can, and she's not able to be there for Turquoise or Kai in the way they need. And that's just presented as something that is unfair and sad, which is often how having someone in your life struggling with addiction can feel. And mm-hmm. Turquoise is so gentle with her. And it just like, I don't know, that scene got me really emotional. It is really hard to watch someone have to navigate that situation and also be like, that's my mom, I want the best for this person and they cannot show up for me, but I can show up for them right now. And still I like that after that, that's not the conclusion of that relationship. Charlotte doesn't change overnight. She's been this way towards Turquoise for a long time and is still, essentially ambushes her and Kai. And Turquoise mm-hmm. is like, this is the line. We've found the line. Congratulations. Which is sad in some ways because she's severing the relationship with her mom, at least for now. But I thought it was really, that's like a really great moment for her. And you see the kind of spectrum of what this mother-daughter relationship has looked like over the years in without a lot of time. And it's so beautifully written. And again, just like Nicole Beharie is unbelievable in the way she performs those scenes. And yeah, I don't know. It's like a relatively small part of the movie, but like Turquoise growing up with a parent who was both suffocating in a different way and mm-hmm. struggling with addiction. I just thought it was like so good. I haven't seen that relationship done like that many times.
Yeah,
truly. And it's, Turquoise, the patience she shows her mom is, I don't have that kind of patience. it was such an interesting, we were touching on this as well already, but the way that information about the Charlotte character is woven into the narrative, where at first it seems like, you kind of have a sort of a stock character of like the overbearing religious mother. And it came as such a surprise to me when she shows up at the bar and she's like blackout drunk. And you're like, wait, is this the same woman who had just been like talking about needing to save her daughter and like wanting to bring Turquoise and Kai to church to, pray? And
it's such a little detail, but the fact that like there's like a little line from Charlotte saying that she didn't think that Turquoise was working tonight, and so also that she's still mm-hmm. it's an ongoing quest to hide her addiction mm-hmm. from her daughter and from her family, which is like, yeah, so simple and so quick, but definitely hits.
And prior to that, because I think there are three main beats where the Charlotte character is involved. The first one is the scene where Turquoise takes Kai to the church to meet up with her mom and say, I have to work tonight. Can you watch my daughter? And mm-hmm. Charlotte is like, no. She basically says, like, kind of gives an ultimatum, like, I'll be more involved in both of your lives if you accept Jesus into your heart. And Turquoise is like, well, pass. So never mind. And then Charlotte says something like really hurtful. She's like, well, she's not my daughter, so, you know, like, yeah, why should I bother?
In front of Kai, too.
Yeah.
I was like, geez.
Horrible.
Yeah, that was really cruel. It really stuck out to me.
Yeah.
I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Which, you know, shows the hypocrisy that a lot of religious fundamentalist type people tend to display. And the hypocrisy keeps going because in the second beat, she... Previously, Charlotte was like, oh, you're working at the bar, you're doing the devil's work. And then she is at this same bar where this quote unquote devil's work happens, and she's drinking heavily. And to be clear, I'm not casting judgment on alcoholism, but again, it's
the hypocrisy element.
The hypocrisy for Charlotte to judge Turquoise for working at a bar, and then for Charlotte to turn around and get drunk at that same bar to the point where like her daughter has to bring her home and take care of her. And then the third beat, Charlotte pretends that never happened, and she's in church again, and this is the scene where she's trying to, you know, save Turquoise and Kai, and she's continuing to judge Turquoise.
Well, what would really help her is like helping out with Kai, like the simple things that Turquoise is asking for.
Right, that, and then the final beat of all this is Charlotte becoming physically abusive to Turquoise, which is like the last straw for Turquoise. It was just like, I was fascinated to see it play out the way it does, because again, it feels very authentic and realistic in a way that relationships like that are not often characterized in a way that feels so authentic.
Yeah. I think one of the things we haven't touched on yet is Turquoise's relationship with the men in the story.
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
I'm glad she chose herself. We need more stories of women being like, not to say I don't want romance, but these guys aren't right for me. I'm just going to live my life. We do not have enough stories like that. Mm-hmm. So many stories about women would like end this one very differently. It would revolve around her making a choice between Kendrick Sampson's character, Ronnie, and her boss at the funeral home, Bacon. Mm-hmm. But that's not the story. That, you know, Channing Godfrey Peoples is smart enough to understand, like, that's not really authentic to Turquoise's story or what this character needs, which is to figure out things on her own. Like, to really figure out, like, what do I want for myself and for my daughter in a way that is holistic and recognizes her own desires and the desires of her daughter. I think neither of them are bad guys, which I like. I like that, you know, they have their faults. Obviously, Ronnie, I think specifically decided to use the money for the dress for something else, because there's that moment in the bedroom, right? And they're having a conversation. They're having a conversation at some point. He's like, oh, but someone is, like, selling their, like, whatever. And this could lead to me opening up my own kind of car shop business or whatever. And, like, Turquoise is like, you gotta be kidding me. And it's just, like, neither of them are bad people, even though I feel like Ronnie doesn't, I mean, doing something like that with the money shows, in my opinion, a little bit of a lack of respect and understanding, right?
Yeah.
And then Bacon is so obsessed with whatever image in his head he has of Turquoise, he refuses to acknowledge that she's not interested in him.
Right.
And like, she does not need him to solve her problems. Mm-hmm. Like, she can do that on her own.
Yeah.
Come on, Bacon. Like, dude.
There are times, it's so funny because I feel like Bacon in some ways presents himself as like, I'm the mature option, but he's acting like a teenager in the way that he talks to her, where he's like, someday. It's like, it just feels very like, I don't know, there's a little bit of an entitlement there, but it's just like also emotionally immature, the way that he's like, well, sure, you're not interested now, and you haven't been interested for 15 years, but one of these days
you're gonna just like open your eyes and see me. And it's like, no, if it hasn't happened yet, sorry, Bacon, but... Right.
And it doesn't make him a bad guy, like mm-mm. like you're saying, Angelica. Like, in the same way, where it's like Ronnie, again, is like one of the people who cannot show up for Turquoise and Kai in the way that they need. But you can also tell that he loves his daughter, mm-hmm. and he's not made out to be a bad person or anything like that. He's made out to be someone who I think that, like, the main, I guess, flaw of his that stood out to me, which you kind of just said, Angelica, was like that he sort of undercut the amount of work that Turquoise had done in raising their daughter. It doesn't mean he doesn't love his daughter, but he, like, there's a few different times where he sort of just says, like, well, you'll figure it out. You always do. And it's like, well, she shouldn't have to, like, if you mm-hmm. did what you said you were going to do. But again, it feels like a person that you've met before mm-hmm. in all the, like, messiness that people can be. And also that, like, Turquoise, I don't know, I felt for her in the way that it's like she's still clearly attracted to Ronnie and, like, has love mm-hmm. for him. Mm-hmm. And it seems like to me, again, I'm, like, probably projecting all over the movie, but, like, that, like, she always is, like, holding out hope that he's going to show up in the way that she mm-hmm. needs him to, but, like, knows deep down he probably won't, because she is mm-hmm. usually prepared for Ronnie to not show up in the way that she needs him to, but still has love for him. And, like, that's a, you know, also very different, painful dynamic to be in that I feel yeah. like you don't see presented in that way of, like, they're not a bad person, but they can't do what I need. And so it's like, I have to walk away. And yeah, she chooses herself. There's so few examples of that.
Yeah.
And that we get her happy ending and it makes sense. Like, I feel like sometimes you'll get, like, if a character chooses themselves, it requires this, like, Deus Ex Machina writing to be like, and then this amazing coincidence happened, so they'll be fine. But it's like, no, Turquoise had, you know, was able to make it happen for herself. And mm-hmm. her buying the bar was her idea. And it was an idea that was, like, supported by her community at the bar and, like, worked out in a way that felt very real and still mm-hmm. optimistic and happy ending. Mm-hmm.
I just hope she gets better tips than a quarter moving forward. That one guy is like, a little something for you, and his tip is 25 cents.
Doink. Like, yeah, what am I supposed to do with that? Yeah. I can't even buy bubblegum with that. Like, what?
In this economy, what do I do?
Yeah. Does 25 cents even matter? Like, what is that? Yeah. What is that? You might as well give me a penny. Thanks.
Yeah, the men, it's like, what she wants from Ronnie is to be more reliable. And with that probably comes some, like, financial stability, which is what Bacon has and is offering. But she has no romantic feelings for him, it seems. And Ronnie, she does. But again, he's not reliable. He might have a gambling problem, it's kind of suggested. Mm. He also brings Kai into that situation where, like, some people start, like, brawling in front, and she's, like, visibly getting frightened, and he's like, no, it's all good. And it's like, you shouldn't be bringing a teenager into a scenario like that. That's potentially very dangerous. So, like, you know, he's making some choices, but again, like, this is a movie where people are making mistakes constantly, and mm-hmm. it's just a matter of who is going to learn from their mistakes, who is going to grow. And I'm glad that we're focusing on a character who demonstrates so much growth by the end. Like, Turquoise mm-hmm. is, like, you see it with her finally acknowledging that her daughter wants to dance and saying, like, mm-hmm. when are the dance tryouts? She realizes that to be able to kind of have any autonomy over her finances and job is to, like, just take it. It's a huge step and it's a gamble, but it feels right. Mm. And so she buys the bar. And I like that scene where Wayman is, Turquoise is talking about the American dream. And he's like, there is no American dream for Black folks. Like, whatever you have that's yours, like, cling to for dear life. And people are going to try to take it away from you. But, like, for so many of us, that's the best we can hope for. And now she does have that. She has, like, her own thing she's going to fix that damn the stall in the bathroom, yeah, the door on the cooler. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, I almost wish we got like a scene a few months down the road where she had like made some slight adjustments to the bar to like mm-hmm. make it a little yeah. more pleasant to work at. But yeah, sorry, I'm just like rambling, but it's just such a nice story with such wonderful characters as individuals, and then like character dynamics
yeah.
that we explore.
Is there anything else anyone else wanted to touch on?
I hope Channing Godfrey Peoples announces another film soon. That is like my main thing right now.
So I did a little bit of Googling while we've been talking, and it seems as if in 2021, but again, that's over 2 years ago, she started work on a TV adaptation of Miss Juneteenth. But I haven't been able to find much outside of that announcement. That would be really cool. I was like, I mean, that would possibly give Caitlin what you were just talking about, like a deeper look at this world, or a longer timeline, or whatever that mm-hmm. looks like to her. I mean, I hope that that happens, but it was announced, you know, 2.5 years ago now, and I haven't seen an update. Fingers crossed. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I would watch anything that she releases, really. Like, it's yeah. like, and I really love, I mean, I love just in general when directors and writers have a vested interest in a location. I just love that. And it seems like she wants to continue to set a lot of her work in Fort Worth and in the South and in like small communities. And that's like some of my favorite stuff. I really,
me too.
I hope we see more from her soon.
Same.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I wanted to just briefly touch on was that there are a few allusions to the fact that Turquoise used to be a stripper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
It doesn't seem like she's ashamed about it. She is somewhat secretive about it. But to me, it felt like she was kind of like keeping it on the down low to like keep up appearances because of the propriety and the etiquette that the mm-hmm. pageant is so concerned with. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Kai and her family have to be, you know, quote unquote model citizens sort of thing.
Yeah.
But when Kai learns about this and she confronts her mother, Turquoise is just like, I'm not sorry for being able to put food on the table. And she kind of implies that she did this out of desperation, which like mm-hmm. you could argue is like sort of shamey of sex work. But also, again, it's just like this isn't some like dark secret that she's holding on to. It's more like, I did what I had to do. It wasn't ideal mm-hmm. for me. I wish I didn't have to do that. But I'm trying to make sure that you, if that's not something you want to do in your future, like, I'm trying to provide other paths for you. So,
yeah, I mean, it didn't strike me as shamey towards sex work. I think that it was like, it felt like in the moments it came out, it felt to me more like Turquoise was trying to navigate the stigma she's aware it has.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. And also just like acknowledging that that was not what she wanted her end game job to be, in a way that didn't seem like it was cruel or dismissive mm-hmm. of people yeah. who do want to be strippers for a long time and like really love that job. It mm-hmm. wasn't a job that she loved. And also, I think, I don't know, it didn't really ping for me as a shamey moment.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah, yeah. Same. I thought that was a very revealing moment about like the boundaries and dynamics between Turquoise and Kai, and like how Kai looks at her mother. Mm-hmm. And like, there were moments watching it where I like so felt for Kai, because I've like been in her place where you're just like dealing with such tension with your mother. But then I think, like, you know, the parent-child relationship, often it takes a very long time for children to recognize like, oh, my parent is just a person. Yeah. They lived this yeah. whole life before me, and even since they've had me, that I'm not gonna know everything about. And mm-hmm. I think that's like what that moment is kind of touching on.
Yeah.
Like the parts of your parents you don't really know. And I think for Kai, it was like, oh wait, there's a lot about my mom I don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
And how much she works and tries to figure things out for me. And I think the way Channing Godfrey Peoples writes and directs that moment is really sharp in his understanding of the characters, and it's like a closer shot of both of them, and like you can kind of, it's really just smart character work in terms of framing and like giving these performances room to breathe in a way that can reveal further layers about such a moment. I really, I thought that moment was really interesting.
I also felt something, I mean, it doesn't exactly, I mean, it thankfully doesn't exactly mirror the scene between Turquoise and Charlotte when Charlotte needs to be taken care of and needs to be taken out of the bar. But I feel like that is the moment where Turquoise is very much the child and is like, my mom needs me to be this person for her right now. This is what I'm going to do. You sort of see that in the moment with Kai and the birthday cake where she's frustrated that the power has been turned off. Like, this is not the birthday she wants. She's, we know she's disappointed about it, but you can sort of see her make the decision of like, I'm going to go with this because my mom needs me to do this right now for her. Of like, you know, Turquoise just needed her to take the cake and be happy and like even perform like happiness in this really difficult moment for both of them. And it's so, I feel like that's such a, such a part of like becoming an adult, of like recognizing those moments and even when it's painful, like Kai, I mean, and that's so much of why she's doing the pageant in the first place. And then over the course of the movie, even though Kai is not the main character of the movie, like learns to draw her boundaries with her mother of like, this is what I'm able to give you and you need to meet me where I'm at too. But I really liked that just like really subtle performance moment between them where they just both have to, they both decide like the power isn't on and that has to be okay. And it's still a birthday. And it's just like such a, again, it's like the combination of the writing and how subtle and great both performances are that makes me cry. It's really nice.
Beautiful.
This movie obviously passes the Bechdel test. I mean, I don't think we really need to talk about it. Most of it does.
Yes, indeed. So on to our nipple scale.
Where we another ill-fated title.
No, it's perfect. Where we rate the movie on a scale of 0 to 5 nipples based on examining the movie through an intersectional feminist lens. This is a rare moment on the Bechdel cast because we're usually doling out one nipple for a movie. I'm going to give 5 nipples.
Yeah.
To Miss Juneteenth. I really can't think of anything to criticize about it from an intersectional lens. I think it's just really beautiful in the way that it handles the story, the characters, their relationships, the balance between showing the things that they're dealing with, the things that they're struggling with, in kind of balancing that with moments of love and levity and joy. And I love the realism of it all. The fact that like the movie had the guts to not award Kai with like one of the runners up or the queen, like, because every other movie would have been like, and she won because she pulled out all the stops and did this.
It possesses the bravery of School of Rock in that way. I love when the main character doesn't get the prize. It's always like a more rewarding viewing experience.
Yeah, because what's more important is like the lessons they learned along the way. And sure, would it have been nice if she did get the scholarship? Yes, but also as Kai points out, like if I join the dance team, I can get a scholarship through that, and that's actually what I want to pursue. And even though there's not like that big victory at the end, things definitely are looking up for them with like this new ownership of the bar, and Kai is gonna join the dance team. So there's, again, just moments of like levity. There's an understanding that this family's dealing with a lot, but it's all just like handled very beautifully. And this comes as at no surprise because of who directed the film. We're always talking about, okay, like who's handling this subject matter, and because the writer director is a Black woman
from Fort Worth,
from Fort Worth,
like this is her youth that she's like showing mm-hmm. in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So goes to show why it's so important for people of marginalized communities to have the chance to tell their own stories and tell whatever stories they want to tell.
Yeah.
And Channing Godfrey Peoples did an incredible job. And yeah, like we said, I hope there's a lot more on the horizon for her. So, five nipples. I'll spread them among Channing.
Love a spread.
Yeah, oh, a spread. A
spread of nipples. Wow.
Yes. And it's a delicious spread. Nicole Beharie, the actor who plays Kai, Alexis Chiquet, again, still unclear on her pronunciation. So sorry, Alexis. That's who gets my nipples.
Yes. I'm going to go five as well. Yeah, this movie is, it fucking rips. It is like just spending time in a very specific world. I love, like you're saying, Angelica, I mean, there's not a lot of movies about Black people in the South. And the fact that this seems to be, based on the interview she was giving, the exact movie that Channing Godfrey Peoples wanted to make. Mm. And she got to make it, and she got to make it on her own terms. And it's fucking awesome. And I just like, I really love this movie. And I feel like it's also in the like pageant movie genre, completely unlike anything else.
Totally.
There's so many. I guess you could make this argument for Little Miss Sunshine, but I think like especially the Miss Juneteenth pageant and the way that that information is introduced to the audience, I feel like very often you're almost as an audience member like over explained to. Mm. And it almost feels like an Adam McKay movie for a second of like, hey, let me tell you about Juneteenth. And it's like, it's not Channing Godfrey Peoples' job to tell me what Juneteenth is. And it like you find out about this community and what's important to them and their history very organically through the world. And it's I just love everything about this movie. The mother-daughter dynamics. I feel like there's so many movies about generational trauma right now that there's like generational trauma tropes that this movie evades completely. You get little tastes of so many different parts of this world. There's so much about Turquoise and Ronnie's relationship that we don't know, but you get a feeling for it just on the performances mm-hmm. and the writing. There's so much about Turquoise and Charlotte that we don't know, but you get a taste of it. And I just like, I don't know. I think in the past couple of years, I've really grown to appreciate movies that don't feel the need to explain themselves to you. Like you're there and you can sort of get a feel for what the world is when it's shown to you the way that this movie shows you Fort Worth and shows you Turquoise's community and life. And I just love it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go five nipples. How am I going to spread my nipples? Let's see.
Oh, you know what? I want to give part of my spread to shout out Opal Lee and her cameo in the movie. She's included in my spread as well.
I'm giving all of mine to Channing Godfrey Peoples. I'm going to keep it simple. I really look forward to seeing what she makes next and hope that it will get the support that it deserves.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Angelica, how about you?
Five nipples all the way.
Yeah.
And I'm going to echo Jamie and give them all to Channing Godfrey Peoples. I find how, you know, culturally realized and warm and striking and aesthetically astute the film is to be really inspiring. I think there's this belief that all stories have already been told, but watching something like Miss Juneteenth is a reminder that because of how barred Black people have been from telling their own stories, that's mm-hmm. not true. There's so many stories that have yet to be told. And I think, you know, Channing Godfrey Peoples is really inspiring for being able to create a film she's really proud of and didn't have to compromise on and offered audiences something they hadn't seen before, mm-hmm. whose importance lies in the artistry of it and the care put into it, not just because it's, you know, showing this side of Black identity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, just really taken by the film, and I really love it and hope people continue to discover it over the years.
For sure. Yeah. I would say all stories about the straight white male experience have been told.
Yeah.
But there are so many others.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they'll stop trying.
They will not stop trying.
It's never going to stop.
But
so frustrating.
And I can't wait to see Nicole Beharie lead another movie.
Yes. Yes.
God damn it.
She's such a good artist. She's put so much care into her craft. I feel like we've only like scratched the surface of what she can do as a performer. So
for sure.
I really hope for the best for her career.
Same.
Yeah.
Well, Angelica, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a delight.
Aww.
Come back anytime, truly.
Yeah, I would love to come back on. Thank you for inviting me. This was a really fun conversation.
Yay. Of course, yeah. Any movie you want, you can. I mean, it's also fun to shit on a movie for 2 hours if you've got one.
Yeah, it's funny. I've become like known for some reason as a contrarian. Like I hate everything, but haha. See, I talked about how I loved a movie for like almost 2 hours. So fuck off, haters.
And that's that beautiful vulgarity. Wait, what's the deliciously vulgar aspect of
that you all came for?
Exactly.
But truly, thank you again. And where can people check out your work, follow you online, etc.?
Most of my work you can find at New York Magazine site Vulture or in the pages of New York Magazine, because that's my job. That's my main girl. That's where most, like 97% of my work is just Vulture, because that's my job. Mm-hmm. But I do freelance occasionally. And, you know, if you follow me on Instagram at Angelica Jade Bastien, you can keep up with my work or, you know, subscribe to my lovely newsletter, which is updated every 4 months because that's how I roll. Sorry, y'all. But
I love a jump scare newsletter.
It's like, hey, y'all, it's been 6 months. I'm back.
I'd rather that than a weekly newsletter. I'm like, get out of here. Just quit bugging me.
Yeah, it's like, leave me alone. What are you doing? What do you have to say?
Yeah.
But my newsletter is on Substack and it's called Mad Women and Muses. And yeah, you can find me there. You can find me at Vulture. You can find me shooting the shit on Instagram lives occasionally to talk shit about whatever movie I want to. You know, Google me, you'll find me. I'm around.
Wonderful. We're around too. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at BechtelCast. You can go to our Patreon, aka Matreon, where we famously did a whole month dedicated to pageant movies, which we famously called Pageantuary.
Yes.
And that plus many, many other episodes. It's $5 a month. You get 2 bonus episodes every month, plus the back catalog of, I think 100 and, I don't know, 30, 50, something like that, bonus episodes. Mm-hmm. And that is all at patreon.com/BechtelCast.
And you can get merch over at tpublic.com/TheBechtelCast. And yeah, with that, how do we...
Ooh. Ooh, okay, the runner-up of this episode, no, I'm kidding,
is not us.
You know who won? All three of us.
Well, hell yeah.
We won Miss Bechtelcast. We're all winners.
We did it again. 500 episodes running. We did it.
Yes. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.